Football season will be here quicker than you think. When planning your football trips, we know that one of the biggest pains is arranging your pre-game tailgate party. This season, let GridironTailgates.com take care of all of your tailgating needs. They provide everything for your large private party, including a private party tent, tables, satellite TV, catering, a personal bartender, and setup and takedown. Visit GridironTailgates.com and enter promo code PAC12, PAC12, to receive 10% off your group's next tailgate, or call 303-359-5328. GridironTailgates.com are here to make your tailgate experience easy, affordable, and enjoyable. Again, that phone number is 303-359-5328. GridironTailgates.com. Enter code PAC12.
Now available in more homes than the PAC12 network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. The titles just keep rolling in, Dave, and it's going to be a good football season. It's going to be a good basketball season. You just know it. It's the Pac-12. It's the Conference of Champions.
Right. And look, notwithstanding that the Pac-12 hasn't won a title in either of those two sports, and whew. Are we talking 2004? When was the last legitimate USC title? Like the one that's not taken off? Is that 2004?
Yeah, 2004. Yeah, but you got that. It's not. It's legitimate. It's AP poll, dude.
I'm not casting aspersions. I wanted to know, just so we know, when was the last absolute fact that the Pac-12 won a title?
Yeah, football 14... back in 2004. When's hoops? Like, what was that?
Hoops? 98? Hoops is 97. Arizona. 97? Yeah.
Man, it's been a while. Well, we're still the Podcast of Champions. We still talk about the Conference of Champions. And we want to talk about what the people want to talk about, Dave. So email us. If you want to do that, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. Do we have a lot of emails today? I think we do.
I think we've got a good amount of emails. We've got some we've got some critical emails we need to discuss as well, which we'll get
crap,
to.
I haven't looked at them yet. That's always a good sign.
Oh, yeah.
You can tweet us, too, at Pac-12podcast. You can text us or call and leave a voicemail also at 424-532-0678. Write that down. Put it in your phone. You get mad about something you're watching on the tube, about the Pac-12 Network or about whatever, just text us. Send us a voicemail. We'd love to talk about it. And, of course, our website, Dave, which I hope you update after this episode, Pac-12podcast.com.
The likelihood of that seems minimal, but... But hope springs eternal here on the Podcast of Champions.
Yeah, I'm actually moved studio, so Dave is recording this episode, but I'm expecting it to go swimmingly. The level sounded good to me. I'm in the new my new little studio thing, but it's a little tinny in here. Hopefully, get it all fixed. I've got books all over the floor, Dave. It's just a mess in here.
That sounds great. That sounds fantastic. Well, congrats on the move. So we have to, we've got a lot of things to discuss today, Ryan.
Yes.
We've got to talk about Pac-12 revenues because it's the off season, and all we're going to do is talk about money because, well, that's what we do. And then we got to answer a ton of questions. Is there anything else we need to take care of, Ryan?
I do. I want to talk about our sponsor, True Nobilis. And I was actually in Big Bear Lake over the weekend with my wife and some friends and was talking about True Nobilis. I got my, talking about True Nobilis, and I'm coughing up here. I got my sweatshirt, so it was a little chilly in Big Bear, so I brought my brand new True Nobilis sweatshirt there. But it's great. If you're looking for a high-quality athletic wear that motivates you, True Nobilis is your answer. True Nobilis has a motto, quality over everything, and at True Nobilis, you get top-quality products with great designs that are updated every month. There's great casual wear for fitness enthusiasts, t-shirts, tanks, sweatshirts, accessories. There's a selection for men, women, and children. True Nobilis is family-owned and operated and is founded by a U.S. Army veteran. So check out True Nobilis casual wear by going to true tru-nobilis.com. That's tru-nobilis.com. Use our code CHAMPS, as in Podcast of Champions, Conference of Champions. The code is CHAMPS to get 20% off your order. That's tru-nobilis.com. And remember to use our code CHAMPS to get 20% off your order. So I like my stuff, Dave. I'm real pretty happy with True Nobilis now.
Very cool. So shop at True Nobilis, everyone. And do so from whatever links we've given you. Do it now.
Go now. True-nobilis.com. Use the promo code CHAMPS. Well, okay, so do we ever do a show, Dave, where we don't mention John Wilner?
In time immemorial, in years past, I'm sure there was one, maybe even two episodes in the early nascent days of the podcast that no one can remember. But in the near term, no. John Wilner is a fixture here. He's almost as much of a fixture as Kyle Bonaguro was during the season. We don't mention him anymore, but he was a fixture during the season.
He's in like Asia right now, like vacationing. So hi, Kyle, if you're listening to our podcast in Asia.
Yeah, I really hope he isn't. I really hope it, like the you know, if he's hiking in Asia, the like moments where he has an internet connection, he's not using them to download this really fine podcast that I have very, very positive feelings towards at all times.
Right. Well, okay, so basically what was going on, and John Wilner always does a great job. He's with the Bay Area News Group, you know, the San Jose Mercury News. But he always does a great job of kind of summarizing what some of the big news that comes out means. And basically what happened was the rumors were that the Big Ten is going to distribute $50 million per school in 2018. So it's an increase of 40% year over year with their new TV deal with Fox. The Big Ten has been doing it great. There's Michigan. Their annual financial presentation came out and it showed $41 million in distribution. So pretty much confirmed what the rumors were about the Big Ten. And so what Wilner did is put together a great piece, showing basically what it means for the Pac-12 and compared what the Pac-12 makes now. And there's some projections and all this kind of stuff, but with all the different conferences and the glaring number to me, Dave. So in 2018, the Big Ten is going to distribute $51 million per school. And that was confirmed. It's projected for the Pac-12 and they did some increases that he's projecting. It works in those calculations. $33.5 million per school. So that's $17.5 million per school for this year. But if you look at it from 2019 to 2024, per school, I know you're not a big money guy, but the per school for the Pac-12 versus the Big Ten, so example, USC and Ohio State, or maybe a better example, like Washington and Rutgers. Rutgers would make $105 million more than Washington over that 5-year period. So that's not insignificant. That's huge, huge money. That would be entire athletic department budgets for like a division of a group of five conference.
Yeah, it's bonkers. And like that's at the level where even I'm not a monetary alarmist as far as these things go. I think there are diminishing returns once you get into like there's a certain level of like what are you actually going to spend an extra $50 million on? And I'm sure there's people can come up with things, but the things that you spend money on are the things like coaches and facilities that have a direct impact on what's going on the field. And those can only, I mean, obviously you could probably improve facilities infinitely, but it's diminishing returns once you get beyond a certain level. But at that level, where you're at $20 million more per year, we've already seen in the last couple of coaching carousel cycles, salaries getting inflated, I think, beyond a point where I was realistically expecting they would go. Like to have coordinators, Dave Aranda, again, I think he's making $2 million a year to be like a fine enough defensive coordinator at LSU. Is that correct?
I believe so, yep.
So to have it already be at that level where the coordinator salaries in other conferences are already getting to the point where I don't know how easily like a median Pac-12 school would afford that. I know Oregon, is able to pay Jim Leavitt about 1.5, but even still, that's one school doing that, and they're doing it with all of Nike's money behind them. For like a Washington State to ever compete at that level, to Oregon State to ever compete at that level, for the Arizona schools to ever compete at that level where they're paying that much money, for Colorado and Utah to ever compete at that level where they're paying that much money regularly to assistant coaches, I just don't think that is entirely reasonable with this amount of money. Now, that being said, we have pointed out in the past the differences in the Pac-12. It does draw from, or in, if it's operating at its most efficient point, it's probably drawing its assistance from a slightly different pool from other schools. You know, you want guys with West Coast recruiting ties, which generally means they're West Coast-ish guys. So you can probably anticipate a certain amount of regional discount, but I don't think it's going to be on the order of, you know, whatever $20 million more per year that the other schools are making in different leagues.
It's funny. So the $105 million over 5 years per school, if you're looking at a conference, it's like $1.25 billion more over that like 5 year span. So like the life of one student athlete, the Big Ten will make 1.25 or something $1 billion more than the Pac-12. I mean, that's insane. Now that's the biggest discrepancy, and they beat even the SEC, but like over $1 billion over the life of one student athlete, Dave, like that, even you, that has to be alarming.
Yeah, no, it's hugely alarming. I think it's more alarming from I don't know if by a school by school basis. It's alarming, obviously, but I think it just occurred to me that this might be and this might be a dumb thing to occur to me at just this point, but this leads me to consider that this might also be something that affects the very survival of the sport, because if revenues get so far out of whack that it actually does affect the competitive balance, and the Pac-12 is essentially no longer a Power 5 league, even if it is de facto, I don't think that does anything good for the product on the field. And I think, and there's imbalance at every level here, because the Big Ten, I mean, obviously there's going to be new media deals and the whole deal, but the Big Ten is outpacing everybody by a pretty wide margin. They're outpaced, so it's $105 million to bring it all. It's $105 million is the difference between the Pac-12 and Big Ten over a five-year span. $51 million between Pac-12 and SEC. $27 million between the Pac-12 and the Big 12. And Pac-12 and ACC is $10 million, which is more or less negligible. And you could make an argument the Big 12 is more or less negligible as well. That reads more to me as there's two-ish halves there in the SEC and the Big Ten, and three have-nots. Because $27 million, you could make this argument with the Big 12 and say their distributions are nearly $80 million less than the Big Ten. They're having a catastrophe as well. The ACC is in basically the same boat. So maybe that's not even the takeaway that the Pac-12 is screwed. Maybe it's just that this model doesn't work and they have to move to something more collective as a Power 5 in terms of how they negotiate their TV deals. You know, the same way the NFL is done with their TV deal. It's a broad league-based thing. Maybe it just needs to be that for the Power 5 schools.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think the Big Ten has done it really well because they can renegotiate too. Like the Pac-12 was stuck in this deal forever. And I think the Big Ten gets to do three new deals in that time. So, I mean, every time you do a new deal, it's obviously getting better. The Big 12 is a little different with Texas and Oklahoma. Their big dogs get more money, and I think they control their own, tier three rights and things. So there's some different things there. And the ACC just launched their own network, already expecting $10 million per school. So, you know, like 10 times basically more than what the Pac-12 is distributing for the Pac-12 network that's been around a long time. I get it that the Big 10's really outpacing everyone. But I certainly like the way, you know, some of the other conferences are positioned compared to the Pac-12. And by the way, the Pac-12 commissioner, who's well at the bottom of this totem pole, gets paid the most of all the commissioners.
Oh yeah, I don't want what I'm saying to sound like justification for anything the Pac-12 is doing. I think they've failed in so many wildly different ways that we've covered at length. I just mean that there's real imbalance here. Regardless of whether you think it's, obviously the Pac-12 is at the bottom of this, but there's real imbalance everywhere here. I don't think this is long-term
something they can sustain as a sport, because you can't have the Big Ten. I mean, if we're making the connection that money equals better quality of play, which whatever, but if we're making that connection, however loose it is, and that holds true, then the Big Ten should be winning a whole hell of a lot more games than everyone else over the next 10, 15 years. And if that's true, then that's affecting the competitive balance and the whole deal. And I know the SEC won't stand for that. So it'll be interesting to see where this all goes. But the Pac-12 is certainly not positioned well. And that goes on a lot of the leadership here.
Maybe we should, can we start a Big Ten podcast? Should we do that? Like, can we get a little bit of that money coming our way? How do we leverage
that? We'll have to get even fatter, I think, if we're going to cover Big Ten Midwest schools. Work in a lot more butter into the diets and drink a lot more heavily.
I can
handle every bit of that. Every single bit. I don't know about you. You're a volleyball player. That really doesn't equate.
I could have M&Ms for breakfast, you know. That's fine with me.
Whatever.
I can work at it.
Live your truth.
We got to get a little bit of that money. We got to get, you know, it's not trickling down here in the Pac-12. We need some of that Big Ten cash.
Absolutely.
So we'll see what happens there. Obviously, I think that's going to be a big topic in about 4 weeks at Pac-12 Media Days. I'm sure Larry Scott's not going to say a whole lot about it, but that's some pretty big numbers, big gap there.
Absolutely.
Well,
should we get some questions?
Yeah, I don't think we really had much on like the Twitter sphere and stuff. People were kind of talking about that. I think they suggested some baby names for you.
Yeah, Gary Indiana would be a very good one for if I had a boy, because Gary is a real dump. But I feel bad for Gary because it was one of those old industrial towns that just kind of got, you know, shuttered by the economy changing. Like, it was one of those Great Lakes towns. But yeah, it's a dump. So I'd be fine naming my kid after that in honor of what it once was. So yeah, that's a good one. I like that suggestion. Hand them over. If you've got suggestions of really crappy towns, crappier than Abilene, Texas, because that's the rule here. And assuming I have a third child, which is no guarantee.
Is that in negotiations right now, or are we like?
It's a discussion that I generally do not take part in, and I will not have any decision making power over. however, if it gets made, I will have some capacity in helping out with the name. So,
all right, we had Tucson too. I think someone suggested Tucson on Twitter.
Tucson's a little rough for me. So, like, Gary's a name. Abilene can be shortened to Abby. Berkeley is at least a last name. But Tucson, like, what are you going with there? Are you going with Tucson?
Yeah.
Like, what are you calling that kid? So I want to be fair to the child. Like, they've got to at least get a workable name out of this. But I also want to keep up the theme. So I'm of opposing minds on this, because I want to name him after a shitty city, but there are fewer and fewer dumpy little cities that are you know, workable names.
Right. Yeah, you don't want like some fully bearded fifth grader to get beaten up because they named Tucson, you know?
Right. And I want it to be like obviously the name of that city. Like, obviously. Like, Abilene is nothing but Abilene, Texas.
Yes.
But also be like a fine and good name, you know? Abilene, it's pretty. Abby, nice. You know?
Yeah. I do like that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, where are we starting on the questions here? Because I think we have a whole bunch.
We're starting with Jeff, where I'm going to omit three paragraphs of what he wrote and just read the second part. So,
okay.
From Jeff, this is SC Made. Real serious question for Dave and not so serious for both. Hi, Ryan and Dave. You two are the best, and I always enjoy your unprepared podcast. Dave, despite not doing any heavy lifting for this podcast, your humor is always appreciated. He then asks a very insulting question about somebody we both know and love. Not so serious question. Easier troll job, please put in order. So we're to rank these troll jobs: soccer fans, ASU Herm Edwards supporters, noodle arm browning at UW, Oregon State fans, and the hope of winning an in-conference game. Okay, easiest troll job as Oregon State fans, but it's the one I would be least inclined to take because it feels mean.
Yeah. I think I would agree with you there. I think soccer fans have gotten better.
They're the most fun troll job.
Yeah, but they've always been really easy too.
And they take themselves so seriously.
Yes. But I to their credit, and I don't want to give soccer fans a lot of credit, I think they've gotten wise to all of our tricks. I mean, I know it's hard to be like living in a country that most people don't really care about the sport that you're very passionate about. And so there's like this defensive.
Well, that's part of the feature for a lot of them. They like being the like people who discovered the band first.
Oh yes, yes, and they're like, oh dude, no, Pearl yeah. Jam was great when I saw them.
Yeah, no, they started to suck when they went mainstream.
Yeah, they, you know.
No, I liked Offsides before it was cool.
Insufferable.
Yeah.
So would you put them second?
I'd put them second, and then I've got some thoughts about the next two. ASU and Herm Edwards is easier to troll than Noodle Arm Browning at UW, and I would say it's largely because UW fans are almost completely in alignment with us on Jake Browning. Like, it's almost impossible to troll them because we're not trolling Browning, because I really hope he doesn't listen to this podcast, but we're attempting sort of to troll the UW supporters because we love them, but it's fun. But they are untrollable on this because they mostly agree.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. I think we don't run into a whole lot of Washington fans that are like, you're so mean. Why are you so, you know, like most of them are like, yeah, it's funny. I mean, you know, we love them, but you're right.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah. And ASU Herm Edwards, there's only been a couple who've gotten a little defensive, but for the most part, I think they're sort of in the same boat where they're just kind of waiting and seeing at best, mostly with the Herm thing.
Yeah.
And then he finishes off, this podcast is one of the best, and although it is fun to jab our crosstown rival, David, you are always welcomed on the P. Ryan, please treat yourself to a massage. I'm sure your back is super sore after carrying David and his lack of effort after all of these shows. Fight on, SC Made. That's great. Sorry, I didn't read the first part of your question, but... Well, I'm sure you understand.
I haven't read it yet either, but I'll have to go back and look. But yeah, no, Dave's dude. Look, Dave's doing more heavy lifting. He set up the Google voicemail. That's why you can text us.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. He's recording the episode today because I'm moving offices.
That's why it sounds so bad, everyone. If you're wondering,
it's gonna sound great. And if you know, send in your request if you want Dave to do more. Like I think that's awesome. You know,
it's so great.
Well, we got a series of text messages, and I don't think the person left a name, but it says...
It's almost certainly somebody who has texted us before, but again, we do not save any of this.
Right. So I think these are name suggestions. So it says 02/02.
Read one of two first there.
Yeah, it's they're coming in the weird order in the emails. He said, I assume if Dave names his third kid Blythe, then he's not having a fourth, right? you've left nowhere down to go from there. What could even possibly be next?
And he said, that's the question. Is it could okay, so he has the suggestions. Go ahead.
Yeah, so he says Lubbock, Vacaville.
See, I would say neither of those is worse categorically than Blythe.
Yeah,
right?
I kind of like Blythe. I think that's cool.
No, as a city. Blythe is a real dump. I mean, you could talk me into Baker.
Baker's pretty cool. I mean, you got the Heisman Trophy first.
You could talk me into Brawley. You could talk me into Brawley, another one of the B cities from the, the hinterlands of California.
Yeah.
There's some dumpy stuff. What if I just called her Bernardino, right? San Bernardino's kind of a dump. There's a lot I could go with there. But yeah, I think Blythe is we're scraping the bottom at that point. So I might need to hold that off until, eighth or ninth kid.
Gotcha. And then he also said, or he or she, we don't know. Also, I'm not a soccer guy, but the one real upside you have to give them is 45 consecutive minutes, no commercials, halftime, then 48-ish consecutive minutes, no commercials. None of these five-hour games you see in baseball and sometimes UCLA football games.
I think that's right. I mean, that is a big benefit of soccer is that when you turn it on, it's on. and it's not, you know, in a commercial because it's interminable like some baseball games get and some football games get. But what are you watching for those 45 minutes, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they have like a replay now, VAR, VAR something. And they still let the clock run. Like, just stop the clock. Like, if you're going to go to replay, like, officials are somewhere in, you know, wherever in Moscow looking at some video thing. Like, stop the clock. How hard is that?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we got another text message. Go UCLA 05 here. I was a biology major. Yes, Ryan's guess regarding vines growing up a wall or around a lattice is indeed an example of thigmotropism. This is exactly what happens when ivy climbs the wall of a building as it grows.
Nice.
There we go. Hell yeah.
A biology major writing in. Thank you.
It's beautiful.
So who is this? Go UCLA 05. Do we need that word? Did we need it?
We needed it. We need all the words. Let's not condense them. Let's make them more. Let's have as many words as possible. Let's make it like German, where you can just make a word out of like just a combination of different nouns and verbs.
I'm going to have to drink less because like I keep losing brain cells. And if you're going to add more words, I'm never going to remember them. It's going to be hard. So,
right. Yeah.
But that's just me. Okay. Stanford Stronghold. This is from Earl in West LA. David, my favorite Bruin, Woods. But he put a lowercase.
Capitalize the R. That's weird.
But you're his favorite. So that's good.
Okay. Well, you might want to switch that up. It's not like an Irish name. Like the capital goes in the first. In the first letter, but okay, fine, whatever.
Will 2018 be the year of the gutty little Bruins break the Stanford 10-game winning streak? I hope not, but I'm wondering what the wisest Bruin in Georgia thinks.
Wow.
I think those are two compliments for you in that one email.
That was great. I think that was more of a backhanded compliment. I think both of them were, but it's great. No, I love it, Earl. You're great. I looked at this, so I just did my Stanford like early look. They are going to probably be a little rough up front defensively, losing Harrison Phillips, some other pieces up front. They don't return much on defense, except for their secondary. Offensively, if KJ Costello is back, their offense should be pretty darn good if he's, you know, fully recovered from that hip injury that kept him out of spring. I'm going to say it's possible. I think it would be really funny if Chip Kelly did that in year one after Jim Mora had 7 tries in 6 years and couldn't pull it off. I think that would be funny. I don't think it'll be like I think Stanford will be favored by maybe a field goal. I don't think it'll be all that much. The issue for me is it comes after the USC game because of that delightful bit of scheduling. And it's also the week of Thanksgiving. And if we've known anything about UCLA over the years is that they can be prone to distractions in that week after USC, where they get kind of that emotional high from the game, however it goes, where they get kind of peak emotion. And then, getting up for the next game can sometimes be a chore. So I'll say right now, no. I, of course, reserve the right to change that in the next, whatever, 5 months before that game. But as of right now, I'd say no.
All right. We'll see. Chip Kelly magic. He likes beating Stanford.
He does. He does. And David Shaw hasn't had to deal with him in a couple years.
Yeah.
So So if you'd asked me this about any Jim Mora team after, like, 2013, I would have said, oh, yeah, Stanford's winning that no matter what. I'm not there at all. I'm just looking at kind of the way the programs are right now. Look, UCLA could make a ton of strides from fall camp, opening day of fall camp, to November and look like a completely different team by that time. And when they do, you know, it could be that they just, I mean, they could blow Stanford off the field. I have no idea at this point. But if you're asking me, looking at the rosters right now and, you know, what we kind of gleaned from spring, yeah, I'd probably go Stanford right now.
Cool.
All right. We got another one from Earl.
Oh, okay.
Soccer. Dave and Ryan, I don't even have the words to describe how excited I am that the Pac-12 Network will televise 30 soccer games next year. Question. How many seasons of Pac-12 soccer matches does it take to achieve total attendance of 90,000? A. 1. B. 2. C. 3. D. D, no one knows because it has not happened yet. E, no one cares. Let's see if you can turn this into another 15-minute soccer discussion, Earl in West LA. All right, so if you're at Drake Stadium and it's a men's soccer game, or if you're at, where does USC play at soccer games?
They only have a women's team. It's McAllister Field.
You guys don't have men's soccer?
No men's soccer.
Jeez. Okay.
They won I think they won 2 national titles in the last decade, but I don't think a lot of people go to the games is my guess. I just don't know.
Who knows? I can't imagine it's more than a couple of thousand tops, right?
Right. I wouldn't think it's that. And that's like they're a really good team. I think that UCLA has a good women's team and stuff too, I believe, right?
Yeah. The obvious answer is it will take only one season because if you add up all the games, it's going to eclipse that. But not by much, not by a ton. To your larger point, no one gives a crap. Why are you wasting time televising soccer games? Just televise reruns of whatever football game you just played and then televise content about football. I mean, especially when you're in kind of desperate position right now, which you are. You've got to get eyeballs and interest. Whatever. I don't think we can do another 15-minute soccer discussion because we will have rioting in the streets if we do.
Yeah, there was the first 0-0 match, I think, yesterday or the day before, and then now they're doing 2 matches at the same time, so one team can't just sit on it or whatever. I don't know. I'm trying to understand. I watch, but I'm just I'm just not into it. I'm sorry. I just don't like it.
No, it's not great. It's not great. And I had some people on my Twitter who were coming after me for my 0-0 take, where I was any sport that ends frequently in 0-0, how can there be any discussion about whether it's a good sport or not? I mean, if you're ending in a scoreless tie, you're kind of screwed. And they were parsing my use of the word frequently because it only happens 7% of the time. If you end 0-0 7% of the time, your sport sucks. Yes. It just does.
That's much.
And it ends in a tie 50% or more of the time. That's crazy.
Yes. You can't tie half of the time. You're doing something wrong.
It's just I parsing whether or not 7% means it happens frequently or infrequently, it kind of elides the point. Just it's bad regardless. If we're debating whether or not 7% is a lot, it's just bad.
What was it? 5-6 years ago, Alabama, LSU 9-3 in the SEC title game. You still talk about that as being the crappiest thing you ever saw. And that's one game. You would remember that decades later, how crappy that was. You get that crap every time in soccer. Every other game is something like that.
There's a joke among UCLA fans because I think this is correct. Beat me up if it's not. There are 2 separate instances where UCLA played Illinois and won 6-3. And so when I tell people, the worst game I've ever watched was UCLA 6-3, they're like, which one? It was my first game as a student at UCLA. I got to sit in the Rose Bowl and watch UCLA beat Illinois 6-3, and I wanted to claw my eyes out. It was that awful. And that's how I won't say every soccer game. Some are exciting and fun because, miracles happen. But most of the time, it feels like 6-3, UCLA over Illinois.
Nice. All right, I think we're getting a history lesson in this next one.
Do you want me to do this one, or are you good?
I'll try it. I don't know. Fuck.
It's long as hell.
It is kind of long as hell. All right, centers of gravity. Hi, guys. I was thinking about Ryan's recent allusion to Clausewitz's strategy of, quote, moving the center of gravity in regard to how the Pac-12 can save itself from being totally irrelevant in college football. Now, where did Clausewitz come from? This is
that's strategy.
Clausewitz from the Prussian.
Yes.
17th century general kind of crap. What the hell
Look
is this?
Look at you! Centuries, a little bit off. I mean, we're talking early 18th century. This is Napoleonic era, early 19th century, early Napoleonic era. But that's great. Look at you with the history.
No, but I don't remember mentioning this or anything or knowing much about it.
I don't remember you mentioning this at all either. But the important thing is somebody got the impression that you did and thus thinks you are a smart person.
Oh, yeah, that would be incorrect. Okay. kudos that either of you would invoke a reference to a political theory associated with someone other than Machiavelli. But I digress. I would like your thoughts on the observation that there is something the Pac-12, Big 12, and ACC all have in common, but the SEC and Big 10 do not. The Pac-12, Big 12, and ACC all have their own centers of gravity anchored to historically powerhouse programs, USC, Texas, Miami, located in a place with a disproportionately high number of elite recruits. So he's saying USC, Miami, and Texas are all highly fertile recruiting grounds. This caught my eye because California, Texas, and Florida are the three largest states in population, while Florida is fourth and will be number three soon. As a result, it seems like the Big Ten and the SEC have every incentive to keep the Pac-12, Big 12, and ACC around as independent entities. Having five power conferences means that no conference can lock up enough viewers, which the Big Ten and SEC have the most of, and recruiting hotbeds where the Pac-12, Big 12, and ACC are an advantage to form a quote-unquote super league of only blue blood programs. It's true that the SEC and the Big Ten have tried to expand their footprint into each state, but with limited success. Divisional alignments have thwarted any chance for, say, Texas A&M to shift the SEC's competitive balance. It's also no coincidence, I think, that broadcasters have been unwilling to push for more realignment, even though each of the anchor programs, USC, Texas, and Miami, have been struggling in the last few years on the field. Clausewitz's actual quote when translated from German, though, seems to imply that autonomous entities will seek to impose a center of gravity even if it doesn't exist. This leads me to conclude that we shouldn't presume that there's a single center of gravity for Power 5 schools, but in fact, a minimum of five separate ones. In other words, there's more words. I'm beginning to think that this is a playoff, that in the playoff era, having five cookie-cutter leagues is actually probably the worst thing each conference or business partner could support. Now that broadcasters and the NCAA got their way about the championship, it's time for the Pac-12 and others to tailor their conference as they see best with things like the 9-game conference schedules, transfer rules, so on and so forth. I don't think it's a coincidence that the last time a Pac-12 team won a national championship, it didn't have a conference championship or even 12 teams. We were different and it worked out. Let's not be so timid that we lose control of our own destiny. Keep up the great work, Thomas at MRTPSM.
So that was long. That was actually really interesting.
It was.
So I was saying that earlier about the TV money and all that kind of stuff, and how it's interesting that the way that works out is also the SEC and the Big Ten are making, you know, the most money from TV, and the other three have fallen quite a bit behind. And so the argument is essentially, to boil this down, there's a built-in advantage with the three lower leagues that the top two just kind of by happenstance don't have, which is the recruiting hotbeds. I think you could make an argument that the SEC does have it when Florida is good, because Florida definitely does take a lot of Miami and Florida State juice from the ACC in terms of recruiting. But I think the larger point is sound, that nobody is long-term beating Texas in Texas, and nobody long-term is beating USC in California for talent. And if the talent is there, and if those recruiting hotbeds remain roughly the same, which Andrew can educate us about demographic shifts, our longtime listener, but I think Texas and LA are relatively safe from that, from major shifts in that regard. Those aren't changing. So the point, I guess, is that whatever the relative strength of a conference is, you know, play into that and, you know, kind of do your thing your own way. Because, I mean, is the Pac-12 ever going to win playing the Big Ten's game and trying to generate? Because they're never going to make up that deficit in total. Like, they're never going to make $105 million more over the course of the next 5 years. I think the best they could probably do is maybe cut that in half, and does that really do the job for you? So might as well embrace kind of the things that make the Pac-12 unique.
Yeah.
It's an interesting argument. I don't know if I buy it, but it's an interesting argument.
It is. And I think, you know, when you look at the Big Ten is pretty unique, and you're talking about Napoleon and all that kind of stuff. There's almost an element to like Russia, like a Russian defense with a lot of the Big Ten programs where you got to march a long way, you know, through the winter to try to get there, and you get there, you're screwed. We've seen a couple of countries try to do that, but you know, it's like individual states that are big and spread out, and there's like, you know, it's like Iowa and Ohio State and Pennsylvania. Like you basically, you're in this one state and you're the main thing. You know, there's Michigan, Michigan State and stuff, but it's kind of this spread out thing where everyone has their own territory, and it's like you're only your own unique world, you know? So there's not as much overlap. I think in the SEC, yeah, you're in Florida and stuff, but there is a lot of just overlap with everybody. It just seems like everyone's kind of separated in the Big Ten, and they have their own, like you have a whole, you know, Nebraska has like a whole freaking state to cheer for you. You know, it's like this real unique thing that I don't think you have a lot of other places.
Yeah, absolutely. So interesting stuff from Thomas.
Yeah. Thanks, Thomas. I didn't know I mentioned that in my, you know.
I don't think you did.
But whatever. Now I got to go read about this dude too. So like,
yeah. Well, Clausewitz is cool.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he fought Napoleon. All right, you ready for another text message?
Sure.
Fun Chris Hardwick fact. He went to UCLA and competed in the spring sing with his band Hard and Firm. They're also responsible for one of the best music videos of early YouTube, Pie. All right, so if you want to look this up, it's called Hard and Firm, spelled H-A-R-D, N, just the letter M, P-H-I-R-M, and then the song is called Pie. So check it out. I'm not looking at it because I don't really care, but somebody else can look at it and tell us if it's good.
Nice. I'll have to check that out. I didn't know he went to UCLA.
I did. I knew that when I was finding out about all the other fun stuff he's been up to.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right, we got John and Brea. Another relegation email.
Ooh.
Hi, Ryan. I'm sorry?
I just said woohoo, you know.
Woo, relegation. I do love relegation. First, I want you to know how much I enjoy your summer/off-season mini podcast series. It's a fun way for us to get to know you both a little better. I was at work daydreaming about how interesting it would be to join Dave, Rick Neuheisel, and Brian Kelly to watch a college soccer game in Tucson, if only. That would be good, huh? Don't you think?
That'd be fun. That'd be fun. I'd enjoy it.
On to the real reason I'm writing. No, John, I think the real reason you're writing was that opening salvo. Though I don't think this matters to you. You just wanted to say that.
Yeah, that seems obvious.
With Neuheisel, yeah. He said, what if the Pac-12 completely flipped the model of what a college conference is and used the division format as a way to separate the good teams from the bad each season? The Pac-12 could add 6 more schools, San Diego State, Boise State, Nevada, UNLV, Utah State and Colorado State, to create the Pac-18 and completely own the Western United States, then create a 2 9-team A and B divisions and use relegation within the conference divisions to create added interest. Each team would play all 8 teams within their division and 2 teams against 2 teams from the other division, which would leave room to always play your natural rival. That would leave two open spots to play other Power 5 or Cupcake non-conference games. The top bowl tie-ins come from the upper division, but the conference as a whole could have more than 10 teams bowl eligible each year. You could use the relegation format for football and basketball and have all other sports compete as usual because they are still in the Pac-18. Think of the excitement that would be created during the transition year when the bottom half of the Pac-12 is competing to stay in Division A. I apologize for the long email. This might not work for the mini podcast you are doing now. I want to throw it out there for your consideration. Thanks for all you do, John and Brea. I think that's a joke about mini podcast.
Yeah, no, he was dumping on our short podcast, ironically, I hope. That sounds fun as hell, actually. I love that idea.
Yeah. Anything that has relegation in it, I'm listening.
I like this because it takes care of scheduling issues too, because you can play the lower division schools that you would probably be playing some version of them anyway if you're a Pac-12 school. Like, everyone's got UNLV on the schedule at some point and San Diego State on the schedule at some point. Obviously, getting Boise in there instead of, you know, whatever, San Jose State would be a step up for some schools, but it takes care of some of the scheduling problems, which are becoming, I think, even more and more pronounced over time as other big time conferences cease to want to schedule. So I like this idea. Let's do it tomorrow.
I think you got to include Fresno State in that group, though.
Probably San Jose State, too. Make it a Pac-20. Whatever.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, leaving out a couple of the California schools. You kind of already have the San Jose area covered with Stanford and Cal, but Fresno, there's a lot of talent there, like Oklahoma go in and get a bunch of guys. So, you know, you might as well bring that the Central Valley into the mix in some capacity.
Yeah.
But yeah, good stuff, John.
Love it. All right. This is from Lance in Tucson. Dave 1, Tucson 0. I just got through listening to the, quote, Desolation of Dave album. The word seminal comes to mind. The opening track where Dave forgets to post a show was totally reminiscent of his early solo stuff before he hooked up with Ryan and got all corporate and, quote, responsible. One of my favorites was, quote, Tucson and other shithole cities. I'm an SC grad living in Tucson, and I love it here. At least I did before I listened to Dave. Hearing Dave's curb stomping of 90s music was like hearing the bass line to Seven Nation Army for the first time. I think we'll all remember where we were. I know I will. The In-N-Out track was a little derivative, but even great artists say things they wish they could take back. But the ultimate track was, quote, My Daughter Broke Her Arm. When Dave shouts out, quote, There'll be no participation trophies in this house, young lady, it's just, wow. I'll admit my first thought was to call Child Protective Services. Then I realized that's just classic Dave. Besides, he lives in SEC country, and it really does just mean more. So keep up the good work, Dave. You're not just making podcasts, you're changing lives. And Ryan, don't quit your day job. Seriously, go make another Peristyle podcast. Fight on, Lance.
We have some smart listeners, you know.
I love our listeners. They're all
there's
good.
Really smart stuff that people write. It's great.
Yeah. That was good stuff. I have no comment. It was good.
Really? Okay. Great job, Lance. Thanks for that. But yeah, I'd love the. I mean, you can obviously tell they're listening. They're listening to the end of all the crap that we talk about.
Yeah. We're going to get to somebody in a little bit who's not happy. Who's not happy about getting to the end of some of our crap.
All right. Well, here's our buddy Nick. Question. Nick got a little frisky on the Peristyle today, by the way. We had to lock the thread.
Nick?
Nick, yeah.
What are you doing?
There was. I don't know if we want to talk about this. There was a prominent recruit who was about to or going to release
a
commitment video, and someone from another network like kind of stomped on his big day, and there's a lot of discussion about that, and I don't know where you stand on any of that stuff, Dave, but
I think I'm of two minds about it. Because I understand not dumping on a kid's dreams of, like, releasing a video. But I also think that's a stupid dream. So, I'm of two minds. I think we're all part of an industry that, at a certain level, we need to collude with these families and with coaching staffs and all this other stuff. So, it's generally dumb to, like, break the omerta on some of this stuff, the code of silence. But at the same time, like, I can understand, like, readers of these sites also at times being a little pissed. They're like, I pay money for this. Why can't you tell me what you know? So I understand it from a lot of different directions. I would opt for, like, abiding by the kids' wishes just because I wouldn't want to deal with the blowback. But I also think that the abiding by the kids' wishes crowd gets a little holier than thou with this stuff because some kid wants to announce on a video that he's going to a school that he'll probably attend for a year and transfer from. Okay. Who cares? I mean, I poor kid that he didn't get to announce on a video that he made with Bleacher Report that's still made that he's going to release anyway in 2 weeks and that people will still say, oh, this is so cool, even though it's not. So it's fine. So yeah. I'm conflicted, Ryan. I have no strong feelings, but a lot of minor feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I'm never one. You can get burned sometimes. Like, you know, we've all had this happen where, like, hey, this is going to happen, but we want to do this, so can you wait, you know, a week before you say anything? Yeah, sure, that's fine. And then, you know, 2 days later, someone else that you compete against puts it out there, and you know, you're like, well, I could have done it, but, and I, you know, I respected whoever's wishes, and it's a game you play all the time. But, you know, I always try to, if you know a kid's going to do something that he thinks is really cool, like, you certainly don't try to do that. Now, if you see that everyone else is about to do something and you're like, well, shit, I better do it. But it's this kind of crazy thing. But anyway, I don't know how we got that rabbit hole, but Nick in Cyprus says, hey, it's Nick from Cyprus, a.k.a. Big Nick 21 USC. Hi, Ryan. And yes, I'll change it up a little. How you doing, Dave? He did brew in his life. Then he says, wait, Nick, are you off your meds or something? Like, I have to, like,
I got to read it. How you doing, Dave? He did brew in his life, fuckhead Woods. So we asked Nick to change it up last week because he kept calling Dave, don't brew in your life, Woods, I think was the name.
Yes.
And he switched it up. So we can't be mad. He switched it up.
He goes F-word nuclear on you, man. I don't like that. That's...
That was big time.
Come on, Nick.
Stepping up to the plate.
Yeah, it's like subtle. You know, we want some subtlety here.
Nick doesn't. Our man Nick does not do subtlety. I respect that about him.
It's just, I'm just gonna call him a fuckhead. You know, like that's fine. It's like, okay. Question. I'm in a weird mood. Question: what do you make of the past NBA draft? Two first round picks with the number one overall draft pick, four second round picks. For seven overall picks in the draft, would this be considered a good year by the Pac-12 or a bad year? Is Larry Scott to blame, or Pac-12 Network? Is Bill Walton or Kevin O'Neill to blame? Curious on your thoughts. Please be snarky and try to answer this basketball question in June. Fight on from Nick.
Oh, Christ.
I didn't even know there was, we had like Pac-12, seven draftees. That's cool.
Yeah. And top end talent, pretty good. Second, I think it's the second year in a row DeAndre Ayton was number one.
Fultz was one last year,
yeah,
right?
Fultz was one last year. I think it's 2 years in a row. I'm not sure if it was three. But definitely 2 years in a row, the Pac-12 has had the guy. I think overall, pretty good draft for the Pac-12. I think reflective of a greater talent level than was present among those teams in the tournament. I think the Pac-12, as we discussed a little bit during basketball season, has a real coaching problem. The marquee programs, I mean, Sean Miller, I think, is a fine coach. I don't think he's super elite. Steve Alford is mediocre at best. And those are the two marquee programs in the league, UCLA and Arizona. So for them not to have truly elite coaches, I think hampers the league. I think if you're counting the other, you know, pretty good coaches, you're probably looking at Dana Altman at Oregon, who's done a nice job. You're probably looking at, Larry Krystkowiak at Utah, who's done a pretty good job relative to the talent level he gets at Utah. But by and large, I think it's a league with mediocre to bad coaches, and that's reflected in performance relative to talent. I don't think the Pac-12 should be winning a title every year. I don't think they're getting that level of one-and-done talent especially, but they should be performing better than they are. Like, the league should be better than it is. It's been fourth or fifth in most advanced stats rankings for, I think, the last like 10 years or so. There have been some moments, yes, where they've been better than that, but it's there have been a lot of down years. So, yeah, I think a lot of that's a reflection of bad coaching.
Yeah, I just checked out because I don't know anything about basketball. So
that's fine. All right, onward. Onward. Thanks, Nick. Onward and upward. All right, this is from Choney19. Hey, guys, loved the post-apocalypse zombie talk last week. Gave me some things to think about and how to reorganize my bomb shelter. Questions. One, with the new redshirt rule, does that guarantee we'll see JT and DTR, or basically every freshman, get on the field at some point during their freshman years, if only to give them some experience and see what they can do, then redshirt? So let's answer these in parts. So, I don't think it guarantees it, but I think it makes it much more likely.
So he said, with the new redshirt rule, does that guarantee?
We'll see kind of the freshman quarterbacks, USC's JT Daniels.
I think it's going to be certain situations. Like, there's, it's not like you can't use a guy, but, you know, coaches aren't going to play him just for the sake of playing him. You might see a guy that's like the redshirt freshman, you know, the quarterback during his redshirt year, get some mop-up duty at the end of the season just so he gets his feet wet a little bit, but I don't think it would guarantee it, you know?
Yeah, I that's what I would say. It doesn't guarantee it. I think it just makes it more likely. And I think at something like quarterback position, I think in blowouts especially, like say JT is slated for redshirting because Jack Sears emerges, or say DTR is slated for it because Wilton Spate shows that he can come in and just start immediately. I think it does make it more likely that those guys might get a look in, you know, mid to late season blowouts more than they would otherwise, because obviously you wouldn't want to burn a guy's red shirt for that. But if you can play four games, why not get you in there, even if it's just to kind of hand the ball off, just to give you a feel for what it feels like to be on the field in a major college football game. I wouldn't be surprised if that sort of stuff becomes much more prevalent.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
And then number two, are you doing the POC every week because it's a personal challenge, or will you try to do it every week again next year and so on?
Is that like we're giving up sweets or something?
Or is that like it's obviously not useful, so we must be doing it as some kind of like internal like challenge to ourselves? I think it's a little bit of both.
Serious. Yeah, it could be a serious podcast if we skip 5 months, you know, like I think we knew we kind of had to do something.
Yeah, I think there have been a couple of weeks for both of us where we've been like, it would be really beneficial if we did not do one this week. But we've powered through, and at this point, we're just going to continue going because we just got to do it at this point.
I don't think I'd feel bad if we had to skip a week or two. Like, you know, there's not that many left. Like, you know, basically you have July, right?
Yeah.
Like, we could skip one of the next 3 weeks and it wouldn't
really... We could probably skip next week without, I think, even upsetting too many people because we've got July 4th and the whole...
That's true. Yeah, maybe we'll... Actually, let's do that then. We'll just skip next week.
We're going to skip next week, everyone, just to end this personal challenge and also make it so that we can actually build up some content so we're not just taking questions for an entire show. Maybe get a guest again. People have got to be sick of hearing from us, right?
You would think, like, we haven't really heard a bunch of requests for guests, but I'd like to get some on.
Maybe we get Wilner on again so we can talk to him instead of talking about him.
Right.
Three, question for Oregon fans who are listening. Bought my tickets for UCLA Oregon today. Can any listeners of the POC make any recommendations of things to do, places to eat in Eugene during a game day weekend? Thanks for the great work, guys. All right, so Oregon fans, if you're listening, I don't think that's a huge constituency for us, so I hope they are. Make some recommendations for Choney. Place to eat. Things to do. Eugene.
What are we going to do? Should they tweet us? Are we going to...
Tweet us. Tweet us or email us. You know, contact us the usual ways.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this one is Arg.
Yeah.
So is this what you're talking about, Michael?
This is our angry friend.
Okay. So Michael's not very happy. ARG, all capitals with 4 exclamation points. So, I mean, this is serious. He means business.
This is not a joking matter. This podcast that is free is not a joking matter by any means.
This isn't the insult Dave in the first line so we'll read it or take it seriously. Okay, so you guys want insults. Here's the most insulting thing I can say about you guys. The POC is starting to turn into sports talk radio. Perhaps the worst form of media. I would rebut just right away, Michael, that we don't have like crap loads of commercials, so there's not 5 minutes of content and 5 minutes of ads. So I would say we're not turning into that. But we'll read on. I realize it's the off season, but you really think that most of your listeners give a crap about Star Wars, pop music, fast food, or what your kids did? Man, I listen to hear about sports. So he said we're turning into sports talk radio, and he wants to hear about sports, but we're not talking about sport. I'm kind of confused.
Yes,
don't object to some fun, but please keep it more on topic. If I want to listen to a bunch of rambling opinions about topics I don't give a damn about, I can always listen to my family. That's from Michael.
This is what we get for attempting to do a show every week in the off season. What the hell are we supposed to talk about? You, all right, so we rely on our listeners providing us questions because, well, this is a podcast that we do in our free time. And researching a bunch of topics about it, well, it's just, that would take a lot of work, and we're not willing to do it. So we take questions, we answer those questions, and sometimes those questions are a little bit off topic, but we've made a commitment to our listeners to answer each and every goddamn one of them, including this one. So if you have a problem with the things we're discussing, maybe take it up with all of these people that you think don't care about the things we're talking about.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, Dave likes to point out this is a free podcast. I mean, you could point out, well, there's plenty of other Pac-12 podcasts you can listen. Oh, wait, no, there's none other one. We're the only one. So we're the only ones that bother to do
that. I mean, I don't want to make an exclusionary argument. I mean, if I think there's always room for valid critique and all that kind of stuff. I would just say that this is, this doesn't, I mean, look, you can feel whatever you want about what we're talking about. I don't, you know, if you don't like hearing anything that's off topic, I would recommend probably finding something. I can make recommendations. Podcast Ain't Played Nobody is probably more football centric in the off season. Most football podcasts that you're going to be listening to though are very much not, or they have to find really tangential and I want to say very boring ways of making it more related to sports. We haven't really bothered with that, making thematic episodes. Like, I know the Solid Verbal does this, where they do thematic episodes where it's like turning it into a game show or all that kind of stuff. And that's fun for some people. We don't have the energy to put in the work to do that because, again, we're not making any money from this podcast and we both have day jobs. But maybe that's what the people want. I don't fully know, but it's probably not something that's going to happen here. So if you are interested in stuff that is much more football centric in the off season, I would recommend other podcasts. Seriously, and I'm not even trying to be like go to hell. I mean, that honestly is that we are not going to be able to carve out, because we would have to do deep analysis or deep planning of this podcast, and we simply do not have the wherewithal to do that at this moment, to be completely honest and frank with you, Michael.
Yeah, and we want to provide, obviously, a quality. We wouldn't be doing this if we didn't think we could give you some kind of quality product. I think we both, you know, we know more about Pac-12 football now than when we did when we started this 3 years ago. We keep learning, and we talk to people that are involved in it and all the different programs. We, you know, we're doing our best to learn as much, but it is June, and I think a lot of the reason people listen to this show, if you're interested in the Pac-12, if you like the personalities, I mean, if you're listening to, do you think this guy on sports radio has a better opinion than this guy? You're listening to the guy that you just kind of like better, you know, and for whatever reason, people kind of like the chemistry Dave and I have. And so we're trying to bring you as much football knowledge and our insights as possible. But, you know, it's going to, especially during this offseason, it's going to digress to talking about just whatever's going on. You know, I'm moving offices, or one of Dave's kids breaks an arm because he did something terrible as a dad. Whatever
right,
it is.
Right, because
you know,
I'm a horrible parent, and so somebody should call CPS on me, right? I don't know, Michael. I get it. I get your criticisms here, and I take it. I just don't know if there's I'm not trying to be dismissive. I don't know that we're going to be changing that, at least through the off season. So if it is infuriating for you, maybe just check back in with us, you know, in the couple weeks before the season.
Yeah.
All right. Who else we got?
I think Hithloday is next.
Okay. Minimum Basic Blues. I'll have to decline Ryan's request for research last week. WGA rules say I need to wait on my residuals checks from you boys first. I don't remember your request for research from last week.
No idea. Did we ask him to, like, if you make a reference to something we said, like, try to give us some content?
That's the beauty of that. Oh, it all comes together. It's beautiful. rounding out the out-of-conference discussion, four Pac-12 teams will play Brigham Young next year. Arizona, Cal, Washington, and Utah. All are home games except Cal. That's 1/12 of the entire league's non-con games, so it seems like they're worth looking into. What do you think of the other Cougars, and what are the odds of a sweep? I want your thoughts.
They've not been as good. in recent years. I've watched a little bit. I think Utah's done pretty well against them. I just don't. I've not dove into what BYU's program is. I know that there was some talk about with, you know, more people scheduling BYU, it gives the Pac-12 a little bit more flexibility as far as like moving the schedule around, because there's problems with Stanford and USC both playing Notre Dame. But I think when you play like an extra team playing BYU, I think it helps a little bit, if I'm not mistaken. But I mean, I don't remember a whole lot about them. I just know they just haven't been as good.
They were really, they were actively very bad last year.
Yeah.
They're not projected to be very good this year. I'm looking at their schedule now. So it's at Arizona, at Washington, at Utah, and Cal at home. And of those four, the one that feels winnable to me is probably Cal at home. But I think Cal's actually going to be a little bit better than they're projected this year. I think they'll get swept through Washington, Arizona, and Utah. The question is whether or not they can beat Cal. I think it's more or less a coin flip at that point. So, yeah, I'd say it's a fairly decent possibility that they get swept in their Pac-12 games next year. Cal being the one question mark, but I think they open at Arizona, and I think Arizona's going to be really good.
Yeah.
Or at least significantly better than BYU. Washington is unwinnable for them. And then at Utah, you know, you've got the rivalry effect. I think those games are generally fairly close, but I think Utah's just going to be a cut above BYU next year. So I'd say I'd call it a sweep at this point, yes.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you're talking about three teams that are going to be, you know, one, two, or three favorites to win their division. I mean, Arizona might be pick third, but they, who knows? You know, Utah first or second to win the South, and Washington the favorite to win the North. So all those games on the road, I think will be really tough. And like you said, with Cal, sneakily better than some people think, but it's at home. So, I mean, if something like that could happen. But I think there's a really good chance that the Pac-12 would sweep by BYU with that schedule. Those teams.
Absolutely.
Looks like we got another Earl in West LA, Pac-12 Network. Guys, no questions, just writing to bitch. Oh. Okay.
Fun.
So now are we licensed therapists?
I think
now?
That's what we are now. We're Talkspace.
Legally. Okay. The Pac-12 Network has shown some pretty good football game reruns lately, and I've enjoyed watching them. Today I tuned in, and they are showing reruns of conference basketball games all day.
Baseball.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did it? Baseball games all day. It's good. We're like hour.
We're deep in. Yeah. Oh yeah.
My apologies. And that, you know, to be fair, I'm like in a new position, new environment. My monitor's in a weird spot.
I know. And reading is difficult.
It is. I've had the long ones today, though. I think I did pretty good today.
It's the most it's the most difficult of the three R's, but the most interesting thing is that it's the only one that actually starts with an R.
All right, so he says, are the network people really this stupid? Didn't they see all the empty seats in the stands during the game? The stands are less than half empty. What makes them think that this is an audience for reruns when the same audience doesn't bother to attend the live games? Also, do they really expect Pac-12 basketball reruns to compete with live games on the MLB channel? It just doesn't make sense. Earl in West LA.
I want a ruling from my grammarians on this one. The stands are less than half empty. That strikes me as meaning the stands are less empty. So they're less than half empty, meaning that they're actually more full. So I want a ruling from my grammarians, because that should actually read, the stands are less than half full.
Yeah, I would. I'm no grammarian, but I would agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Earl, you're right. You're 100% right. It's crazy, nuts, even that they're playing reruns of conference baseball games. No one cares. No one. It's crazier even than running men's live soccer in the fall, which they're also doing. They are doubling down on some very stupid ideas, and I don't understand why. It should be a lot of football content, a lot of basketball content, but mostly football content, and pretty much constantly. And on like Sunday mornings at like 5 in the morning, you can play reruns of other sports, but that's about it.
Okay, to play devil's advocate here. No, I got nothing. Never mind. You're right. Okay.
All right, Earl in West LA again.
What? Earl?
Earl's going off. All right, you ready? Guys, what national sports network televises reruns? Okay, he's still on it. What national sports network televises reruns of college baseball, essentially minor league baseball, in markets with major league baseball teams? Which answer is correct? 1, ESPN. 2, CBS Sports. 3, NBC Sports. 4, ABC Sports. 5, Pac-12 Network. Well, we all know the answer, Earl, because you provided it in the previous email. It is hard to believe the folks in charge of programming can be so clueless. I appreciate Earl's commitment to this cause. He found one, and he has committed to it immediately. What's great is I think these came at, like, two significantly different times. So one of these came Tuesday, June 26th at 5:41 p.m., and the next one came literally 4 hours ago. So the next day in the early afternoon. Earl is on it.
It might be this thing where he got mad, he wrote in, and then like he was flipping through and he puts a Pac-12 network on and he sees another, like, you know, it's like Oregon State and Cal baseball game. Too bad we don't have Ron Gorsey like live tweeting like a rerun of a college baseball game. But, you know, we wish Gorsey the best. But maybe he was watching that and just decided, like, okay, I'm so pissed. I'm going to write in again. I'm going to do it in a different way. But this is a cause. This is a cause for Earl.
I respect it.
I know because there's 7 networks, all right? So the real devil's advocate, like, if you're like the L.A. one or like the Oregon network or something, and, you know, Oregon State's really good at baseball, and they're making a run for the. Are they still alive? Is that over? I don't even know.
I think our next email's about that, so let's not spoil it.
Oh, okay. But anyway, so and you're like the Oregon regional network, and you want to show some games from the season that like Oregon State like say won the national title or whatever it is. I think that would make sense a little bit. You know, that would, but just to show like random games against crappy teams that didn't make the college, you know, the playoffs or the regionals or anything. It's like, who cares? And if it's on the main Pac-12 network, really shouldn't care. The main Pac-12 network should only show football and basketball. Like, don't show anything else on that. Just show the stuff that people want to watch. I don't know. I get you, Earl.
I'm with you, Earl.
All right. So this is, wow, this came like 3 hours ago. Slogan and a question from Brian from Walnut Creek. Hey, Ryan and Dave. First, as an OSU alum, I'd like to offer the true slogan of Beav fans everywhere, at least we still have baseball. These words are the really only positive sentiments we have about our sports teams, and no women's basketball doesn't count. I've heard this longing for baseball season many times while watching our Beavs lose by 30 in the rain or by 20 in basketball, where we may somehow be even worse than in football. Bring on the relegation. What the Beavs had, what was it? Michelle Obama's brother was the coach at one point.
Craig Robinson. Yeah.
Interesting. But so he's gone and then they stink now, right?
Mm-hmm. And they okay. Stunk with him.
They stunk with him too. Okay.
Yeah.
Now as it relates to baseball, my Beavs are currently playing in the College World Series final. Last night they lost game one and a couple of questionable umpiring decisions went against us that took at least one run off the board, but ultimately had little bearing on the game's outcome. The umps didn't make Luke Heimlich, who shouldn't be playing, in my opinion, hit 2 batters, walk 2 batters, and our best player make an error all in the same half inning. However, these calls led to many of my fellow Beavs to claim conspiracy about how the umps have SEC bias and all the normal crap about how everyone is out to get us, which is a laughable idea considering how bad our sports are. To me, this is the worst part of sports, the constant bitching and excuses that come because a team loses. It happens in all sports, an example being people complaining about my Warriors not being called for enough fouls in the finals, yet they consistently get called for more fouls than their opponents, or my father having never seen a penalty call on his beloved Trojans that wasn't, in his words, complete horseshit. This annoys the hell out of me. So my question to you is, what do each of you think is the worst / most annoying part of fan bases that you would like to eliminate if you could? Thanks. As always, love the pod. Brian from Walnut Creek.
Yeah, I think you've hit it for me, Brian, which is the, and I don't even know if this applies specifically only to sports, but it's, well, talk about it insanely just about sports. It's the insane partisanship where it's if your team does something, it's great and nothing they do is wrong. And if another team does something, they're evil and they did something horrible. I think that's a just a it plays out in sports where it's like, oh, they're always cheating, that school. They're always cheating. And our school never cheats, and we have to compete with that, and so all this other garbage. And that's just not actually a depiction of reality virtually ever. So, yeah, I think that, that kind of crazy partisanship when it comes to refereeing and all this other junk, I think that is probably my biggest issue with fandom in general.
Yeah, mine are like the people that listen to our podcast. Like, they just annoy me. No, I'm just kidding. it's funny. We get this in Los Angeles. You know, there's one local paper, you know, like big paper, the LA Times. There's Orange County Register and stuff too. But, you know, two major universities in the same town, in the same city. And most USC fans think the LA Times is biased against USC, and most UCLA fans think the LA Times is biased against UCLA. So it's like a microcosm of what you see in all sports, but it's like, it's a great little experimental environment where you can see it's the exact same paper and both sides think that it's biased towards the other.
Yeah, absolutely.
You agree with that?
No, and I think that's 100% true. All right. Nice. I love that we're ending on this one. This is from Bob. Your podcasts. I enjoy your podcasts very much, but like, please reduce your use of the word like as a like verbal crutch. I am not like the language police, but in some like sentences you use like at least 5 times. I briefly like went back to you listen to your discussion of the like often quotable Mike like Leach and stopped counting at like 50 the number of times you used like in that discussion. Don't mean to be like overly critical. Keep up the like interesting podcast, Bob. Go Bears. I added a bunch of likes in there just for Bob's benefit. If you ever feel compelled to send this email to anyone besides us, please don't. It's really dumb. Language policing in general is super dumb. Policing it on something like this that is functionally a built-in part of the language at this point. This is like people who get mad at the word literally used in a figurative sense, or people who get mad at really any of this dog shit. It's not... You don't get to control what actual language sounds like over the course of your entire life, because the beauty of it is that it evolves. You're also, I can only imagine, Bob, that you might also get offended when people say no problem instead of you're welcome. There's a big subset of people like that as well, which is crazy. It's a crazy viewpoint. Find other things to tickle your inner ear that make you upset. This is crazy. I mean this seriously. We don't care. I mean, this is fine. But if you say this to other people, they're gonna be they're gonna think you're a nutcase. So don't do that.
I'm curious would I be a bigger offender than you?
I think we're both reasonable offenders. I use it like I find myself right there. See, I find myself doing that on occasion, but I think it's mostly an even battle there. But I don't know, because it's one of those things that, like any verbal tick, you don't actually hear it after a while if you are attuned correctly to the ebbs and flows of language. Like, it's not like I'm sitting here, I just said it twice in that sentence, thinking about the different ums and ahs we say either, right?
Yeah, it's a subconscious thing, and it's funny. So back in my old career, when I was an engineer, I took, and I just said so you use these words. So I went from being an engineer that was designing like computer chips and stuff that would go into satellites, and I moved into like a commercial company, from a military company to like a commercial company that was selling products to other companies that would design these chips. So I was an application engineer. So I would have to go in and essentially be part of the sales team. So you would have to do presentations and give trainings and things like that. So you had to have communication skills. And a lot of engineers, and that's why I kind of liked it, because there weren't a lot of engineers that could actually do that part of it, which always, you know, came fairly easy for me. But I like doing that. But we get to take some different presentation classes, and they showed you, they would film you. And if you went up on stage and, a lot of people go up on a stage and they'll just keep their arms to their side and they'll say, hey, wave your arms around, and you feel like you're making this crazy motion, but then you look at it and like, oh, that doesn't look that bad at all. And they would show you some of those little crutch words that would go so, but, like, things like that, that would, you would pile together. And I think it happens naturally and people use it all the time, but that sometimes they would do like 5-6 of them in a row, and you're like, but, and it just sounds pretty poor after that. And I think I started learning that, and trying to, apply that in our jobs now, especially some of the interns will end up putting on camera. They'll use some of those bridge words and crutch words between questions when they're asking their subject. So I think it's something that I've been conscious of and you kind of look at. But when you're talking about a podcast, you're talking for 2 hours. I don't think it's something you think about, like every word, make sure it comes out clean, prose. Like you're just, it's like you're just talking. But it's something that I've definitely thought of before. So I would have to go back and listen and hear, like, oh, you know what? I've done say that too much,
I just counted while you were talking, and there were at least a dozen times where you used the word like without actually needing it in the sentence.
Perfect.
That's what language has evolved to now. It's conversational. If you actually don't do that, you're going to have a lot more pauses in your conversation because it's a bridge word, because it's functionally giving you time to think of what you're saying next. So you'll have more stuff that sounds kind of like this. And I just don't know that that's any more listenable. I think for some people who have really pronounced language-based pet peeves, it might make it difficult, but just because you have a pet peeve doesn't make that right. I think people need to, some people believe you shouldn't end a sentence with a preposition because they had that drilled into their skulls when they were in grade school by teachers who were incorrect, because that's Latin grammar that has no bearing on English grammar whatsoever. But that's not going to change your viewpoint on that, because you're still going to want to, convolute your sentences into making it so it doesn't end with the word of. That's fine. Do whatever you want to do, but live and let live, all right? If people want to bridge their sentences with like or or so or whatever it is, just get over it. This kind of stuff. I guess we are kind of beating you up over it, but it's just find something else. Criticize us for a take, not for the thing you've apparently willingly listened to a bunch of times that you've decided that you're going to nitpick something that's an obviously natural part of discussion. Like, what's the point of this email?
I mean, it's...
Are we actually going to sit here and go, wow, well, Bob, who says go Bears at the end of his email, so go Bears, we'll throw that in there. Bob says we shouldn't use the word like anymore. So, Ryan, I'm going to go in and I'm going to edit out every single usage of the word like. And until you get it right, we're not recording. And if it takes us 6 hours to record a podcast where you don't use the word like, we're going to have to put in that time. Because Bob, who says go Bears, said we've used it too much.
I do find it interesting, the whole topic, because and that's like was part of the sentence. It's not like you said that, but like I had said before, I think that's something that when you've seen it before, you've studied it, you've had people point it out to you, you've pointed out to other people. I do find it kind of interesting, but because this is this conversational thing and I was listening to you, it seemed like you would say a little bit between stuff. Like, yeah. Was one of your bigger ones, I think. And you would say like, so, and they are these little bridge words. And instead of pausing and sounding more dramatic, you just kind of talk, and that's part of the flow of the conversation. But I would like to go back and listen myself and go, man, you're right. I've said this 50 times, or I said like they're here or so or whatever.
Yeah, but it's
I'm not bagging on Bob, but it is an interesting topic for me that.
It's a different thing to be doing a stand-up interview that's 2 minutes long, because that should sound almost rehearsed. Like, that's the natural way that should sound. But when you're listening to a podcast, I mean, or listening to the radio, or talking to somebody in real life, God forbid, all of those situations, it would be unnatural. I want to say it would sound even worse if people weren't to use bridge words. They're there for a reason. It's not like we evolved this way because we're hiccuping or because we're sitting here. Language always evolves for a reason. There's a reason why we have all these things. I would dare say that the ancient Romans and Greeks had their versions of bridge words. That's why colloquial language, if you ever speak to a Spanish speaker as opposed to learning it in school, it's going to sound a whole hell of a lot different because a lot of the ways the words end and flow is different just because of the conversational nature of the language, and a lot of it includes bridge sounds. So I'm going to say this isn't a valid critique from Bob. I would say he needs to evaluate whether or not this is simply a pet peeve or whether it actually has any value whatsoever.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Bob. Dave hates you, but I think you're
good. I love Bob. I love Bob, and go Bears.
Go Bears.
I think
the Bears are going to beat BYU, but Dave thinks they're going to lose on the road, so I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows this day and age with all that's available to us in terms of information? Well, that's all we got. We've got nothing else.
That was a lot of questions we got, too.
That was a lot of questions. Not a lot of show. I'll be honest with you. I'm a little disappointed in us. We only went an hour and 24 minutes. Even with a lot of grammarian critiques there at the end, even with Michael ripping on us for our topic selection, even with all of that, we still only went an hour and 24 minutes.
For Michael, should we talk some zombie apocalypse stuff? Like, what's the best?
Should I talk about what my kids have been up to?
Yeah.
I mean,
how are the kids, Dave?
They're doing great. They're great. You know, just living their lives.
I think some podcasts might do it, wait till the end. They're like, okay, now we're going to talk off topic stuff. But that's no fun.
We're not going to do that. No, we like to mix it up. We like to mix and match these pieces.
Well, I don't mind having a little bit shorter show since I got to put bookshelves.
I don't want you ever thinking about your bridge words ever again. The fact that you told me you sometimes think about it makes me upset for you. I'm sad for you. I don't want you thinking about them. They're good. Bridge words are good. They sound fine. I don't pay attention to them because they sound good and natural. If you're ever giving a formal presentation, sure, see what you can do to eliminate them. But if you're not, if you're just talking to a human being, talk like a human being. And human beings, they use bridge words.
Yeah. I would agree with you 100%. If you're doing a stand-up interview with someone, you don't need to put bridge words between their answer and your next question. Just go right into it. That's one of the critiques I think we usually do. But for us, this is like an hour and a half, 2 hour long conversation. Like, listen to the radio and listen to guys talk. It's conversational. They're not reading a script or anything. Now, we end up reading a lot of questions, but which is long. We need an intern, Dave, to like help produce the show and read our questions for us, so we can just kind of sit back.
Why don't we use one of your interns, Ryan?
We should do. What, don't you have any interns over, bro? Come on.
I don't think we do.
All right. Well, we got a new one. She was a rower on the USC row team. We'll see. She had some interest, so maybe I'll bring her in and have her read some stuff.
Woohoo!
We could do that. Yeah. Wouldn't that take, like, the burden off, like, have to read all the questions and stuff?
I don't mind reading them because I like to add my own spin on them occasionally. And by that, I mean add words that weren't there in the original question. but I get the impulse, you know, not having to read some of Thomas's very interesting but very long tomes wouldn't hurt. It would allow us both to focus on the words themselves and not having to read them. So there's some value there. I can see that.
We have to meet Hithloday in person somehow.
I think Hithloday is a program of some sort. I don't think he's a human man.
Oh, okay. One of those.
Yeah. No, he definitely, he's definitely made of ones and zeros.
What was it? Someone was telling me, like, you can actually, there's programs out there now to, like, write game stories for, like, real quick, like, from box scores, like it sounds like a human wrote it.
Oh, cool. Let's further invalidate all journalism. That sounds great. Like, what's the value of that? Why would you do that? Game stories are the worst part of journalism anyway.
Yeah, so if you're going to have a computer do it, that's fine.
Yeah, but why even have one? Why even have one? Why even have one now, honestly? Like, why even have one? Just have the play-by-play there, and you can just dive into it.
Could they, like, do our podcast? Like, you basically, you could say, like, you know, okay, Google, or hey, Siri, or whatever, and, like, and have them talk, like,
it would sound too perfect, though.
Siri and Alexa do like a Pac-12 podcast and see how it comes out.
It would sound too perfect, though. There wouldn't be enough bridge words. It'd be very
could you program
quick.
Some in.
Like, maybe you could. Maybe you could. You could say after every, you know, fifth word, add a like and a pause. You probably could. You can automate that.
I have like a Amazon Alexa right here. My phone does the Google. I don't have an iPhone, so we have to do the Siri thing with yours. But
did you just say the Google?
The Google thing?
It doesn't do the Google?
Is it okay, Google? Or it's a Google assistant.
I don't know. I was just making fun of you because it sounded like something my mom would say. I don't do the Google.
The interwebs.
Yeah. I don't do the email.
Well, David, can you do me a favor? It's when you edit the, which is important. Editing this podcast and getting it up so people can listen to it.
Did you just ask me to get it up?
But yeah.
This isn't that kind of show, Ryan.
When you get it up, we were talking about having another child, or you were, right?
Like, right, but Katie's not here right now, so that
that makes it harder.
Well, yes. Now things are getting a little squirrely here.
They're getting a little scrolling. But just update the blog, too, so I don't like log in a week and go, oh, where's the blog post?
I will get it up on the blog.
You rock, Dave. So, look, Dave is not an anchor that I'm dragging through this podcasting world. Dave, we are equal partners, so don't let anyone say otherwise.
Okay, I'm a bird soaring through the air carrying you to freedom.
Right. You know, we're like the Wonder Twins, and I'm the ice pail, and you're the Falcon or whatever, like carrying us.
That was great.
Is that a
that was a deep cut. I have no idea who the Falcon twins are.
No, the Wonder Twins. They were
the Wonder Twins.
It was I think it was like DC stuff. So it was an old cartoon like with Superman and like the Justice League stuff. So there was like these two alien like purplish twins. They were the Wonder Twins, and the girl could be a power to turn into like something, usually something that like flew. And the guy, I think, had to turn into something like with ice. Like, so he'd be like, I don't know. I think that's what it was. But
so you're calling me the girl in this situation?
You were the girl. Well, because you were going to be the hawk thing that was soaring and taken away.
I can buy that. That seems fine.
Yeah. I have to Google it.
I've got some feminine qualities, I would say. The beard.
What?
I would say I have some feminine qualities, I would say.
Yeah, under the beard?
The beard,
sure.
Yeah. I'd say so.
It's kind of a feminine beard. No.
I would think so. Right?
That's a pretty manly beard, I would
say. It's a pretty beard. That's what we'll say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been fun and lovely.
Yes. Well, that's your buddy, David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham, and together we're the Podcast of Champions. Thank you so much for tuning in, listening to all our ramblings. Hope you enjoyed it. If not, we'll try again next time. Thanks for tuning in.